I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. This week, our guest is TK Kelly. He's a Chicago native and recent Ohio State graduate. TK just earned status on the Latin American Tour, and he turned professional after a good amateur career that he won a NCAA regional last year. Two Illinois State amateur titles, beating up on hacks like me. And, you know, his senior year, he had All-American honorable mention honors. So, TK, welcome on.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to hop on here and talk about some stuff and have a fun little discussion.
Yeah, we're diverging. We've been on a architect tear, and we love kind of the whole going for the professional career and the journey, and glad to kind of catch you on your early part of your journey to hopefully the PGA Tour here.
Yeah, absolutely. Going to be down in Latin America this spring and fall, playing on that tour, and excited to just get it going and see what traveling's all about. You know, meeting a ton of people and seeing a bunch of new places. I'm really looking forward to it. Should be a fun time.
Yeah, so why don't you give our listeners a little background into you, how you got into golf, and kind of your career thus far.
So my biggest probably point of my background would be that my mom, she also played college golf. She played at the University of Tulsa. And they actually won a national championship in women's golf while she was there and got second two other years. And so she, a bunch of her teammates went on to play on the LPGA Tour, and she just played with ladies that played at other schools that are on the tour now and in broadcasting and stuff. So she has a lot of friends throughout the game, and golf is just kind of something that's always been really big part of our family. My grandfather was on the board for the WGA and was a member at Butler back in the day with all the old Western Opens that were out there, and he was the chairman for the 1990 Senior Open at Medina. So just a big part of, it wasn't the Senior Open in 90, it was the U.S. Open. That was when Hale Irwin won. But, yeah, so golf has just kind of been a big part of our family, and just got introduced to the game at a very young age and took a liking to it, and slowly started to quit every other sport as I got older to just focus more and more on golf because I could just tell that was the sport I loved the most and it's what I like to do.
How long did it take you to beat mom on the golf course?
I think I was probably around 10 or 11. Once she had me and my brother, she didn't quite keep her game up as much. She didn't really practice as much anymore, and the less she practiced, the less she wanted to play, because it always would annoy her or bother her that she couldn't play as good as she used to be able to. She's the most competitive person I've ever known, and so she has gotten back into it in the last few years. Now that me and my brother, I'm through college and my brother's in college, so she has more time to work on her game, and she's definitely taking advantage of that. And we have a lot of fun with our family foursome grudge matches whenever we go on golf trips or holidays back home. So it's a lot of fun. But yeah, she's getting back the game a little bit. She'll play some really good golf in spurts. I think a summer or two ago, we were up at Erin Hills, and she convinced me and Will to give her one too many shots, and she ended up shooting a 74 on us at Erin Hills. And her dad beat me and my brother by an absolute landslide, so that was a tough loss. But yeah, we all have a lot of fun with it as a family.
Does your dad have game, or is he kind of dragging down the family handicap?
He has some game that he doesn't want to let on. He doesn't want really anybody to believe the game he has, but he's always had a pretty smooth swing, hits the ball nice. He was a really good putter when I was growing up, but he seems to have been struggling with the flat stick a little bit the last couple of years. But yeah, no, he can play some good golf as well. Just not, I wouldn't say, and he would admit that it's not quite to the level of me and my brother and my mom, but he's a dark horse in the family for sure.
Yeah, he's probably getting some good pops and can sneak up on you, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
So who were some of kind of your favorite golfers growing up? I always think this is interesting with the younger guys. I was a big Tiger guy. He was kind of huge when I was young. But curious with you, who was kind of some of the big influences?
I mean, for me too, it was just far and away Tiger. Especially growing up out at Medina, one of my earliest golf memories was going out to the 99 PGA. And I was only 5 years old, but I was still walking around with my mom, and I just can faintly remember watching Tiger. And then in 2006, I was 12 then, so I have a lot better recollection of that, and that's when I was really getting into golf, and Tiger just blew away the field again there. So it was just like watching my hero right in front of my eyes. I would always go down to the Western Open at Cog Hill and what became the BMW to watch Tiger, and he was just almost like a mythical creature to me. And played all the games, video games, Tiger Woods video games growing up, and that was kind of the heyday of my childhood, was when video games started to get really big like that, so that also played into it. But then also some just other guys. I was a huge Camillo fan around the 2006 PGA. I think I followed him on Thursday and Friday, like all 36 holes that week. I was really into the Jay Lindbergh closing line back then, and he was rocking JL, and he was ripped and just hit it forever and was kind of a cool guy. That's when he did the Spider-Man thing on the greens. Looking back at it now, it's kind of funny, but just when I was a 12-year-old kid walking around, I thought Camillo was one of the coolest guys out there.
So, and then early in your junior career, were you just decked out in Jay Lindenberg? Were you that guy?
No, I had one mock Jay Lindenberg shirt that I loved to wear. If I look up a picture of it now, it is probably the most brutal golf shirt I've ever owned. And I regrettingly did have a white Jay Lindenberg belt with a big JL buckle. That has since long been retired. But those two pieces definitely were two staples of my junior golf wardrobe, probably around the age of 12 to 13, which they have not seen the light of day probably since then, but back then they were definitely two of my favorite articles I had.
You know, I keep wondering, like, when the white belt's going to die, because, like, there's such strong resentment towards it now with a certain aspect of the community, golf community. But I keep seeing more and more young kids wearing white belts. Like, what's going on? Where's the disconnect?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I was 14 or something, someone were to tell me that white belts weren't cool, I would probably look at them like they were crazy, because I was convinced that white golf belts, like, I would primarily only ever wear white golf belts. Like, I didn't think anything else looked good. And now I look at an outfit and I put a black belt on with it, and I'll think, you know, back in the day I would have thought this looked weird. But I just think it's an age thing. I think kids, once they get to a certain age, realize that, all right, you know, like I did, and probably you did, I don't know if you were ever in on them, but just like, this just doesn't look good anymore. But when you've got, you know, guys on a tour wearing big white belts, you've got a 40-year-old guy at the club wearing a big flashy white belt, then there's a real problem there, because there's just no excuse for that.
Yeah, I mean, if I dig up the relics, I mean, I'm guilty. I had a white belt that would make appearances for like 2-3 years, but it's been long retired, kind of like yours. You look back and just shake your head at some of the things that used to be in for golf. You had a good high school career, and then you went to Ohio State. What other schools were you looking at, and why'd you go to Ohio State?
I was looking at Ohio State, Illinois, and Iowa. Those are probably my big final three. I like the opportunity that the other two schools offered me. I think they both have, you know, awesome history with their golf programs and have really good teams. Obviously, what Illinois has done in the last 5 or 6 years has been remarkable. Coach Small's done an unbelievable job there. What stuck out to me about Ohio State was just the lure of being an athlete at Ohio State and everything that came along with it, and just the history of the athletic program there, and the history of the golf program as well. Mr. Nicholas having played there, and John Cook, Joey Sindelar. There's just even recent guys like Ryan Armour, who had a great web.com tour season last year, and Bo Hoag's another one who's getting out there now, and he's starting to play well. So just a lot of history, and just it was the perfect distance away from home for me, 6 hours driving, and only an hour flight if I needed to get back home from something. I just kind of wanted to go out to Ohio State and Columbus and kind of have something that was my own a little bit. I had no connections to the school or anything like that, and I thought it was a good opportunity for me to step away from Chicago and home and kind of make a name for myself somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, the climate's got a little bit better, too. So with kind of Jack, and obviously Jason Day calls Columbus home. Would Jason Day spend any time around the practice facilities? I saw he shot that Nike commercial out there.
Yeah, he did shoot that Nike commercial out there, and he, when I was in school at one point my last year, he came to check out the facility to see if there was, you know, if he had any use for it, or if he wanted to practice out there at all, and I believe he has gone out there and practiced from time to time. He never came out and practiced with the team per se. He would just kind of, you know, use the facility when we weren't out there, just to kind of get away and find a quiet spot to work on his game when he was back home, because I knew he finds his time back home really valuable to him and his family, so he kind of kept it quiet when he was back in Columbus, but every once in a while, you could tell he was just out there, that he'd been around a little bit, which was kind of cool. And it was really cool to see that commercial shot at our facility, because I had no idea that it was, and all of a sudden I look at the video on Twitter one day, and I was like, hey, it's building looks pretty familiar there. So that was cool to see.
It's probably good that he wasn't out there when you guys were, because, you know, if he was playing in front of you as a single, you guys would just be standing waiting for him to finish his pre-shot routine.
That's a good point. We might get sick, too. whatever ailments he's catching, it was good that he wasn't out there so we wouldn't get those, too, and get the whole team sick.
I mean, he might have caught some stuff from you, just, you know, even being in the facility and being, you know, subjected to, you know, college germs.
That's it. Yeah, it's a good point. It's a really good point. All stuff from the dorms.
So, you know, you're in college, you're playing all the AM stuff. You know, what's some of the stuff that you'll miss most about amateur golf as you now head to the Latin American Tour?
I think the biggest thing to miss about amateur and college golf is just the experiences at every tournament that we often got, and also just the golf courses that we got to play. Like our first tournament of the year, my senior season, was the Carmel Cup at Pebble Beach, and we stayed in the lodge for 4 nights and got to play at Pebble Beach 4 days in a row. I shared a room with my best friend at school, and we were right off the first tee of Pebble Beach, and we were just talking like, there's nothing else can really top this experience. We're not going to be able to, you know, find a cooler buddy golf trip than the one we're on right now, playing at a tournament at Pebble for the next 4 days. It's just experiences and the unique tournaments like that that college golf and amateur golf lends itself to is really, I think, the best part about it. And just the camaraderie of going to these different amateur events like Sunny Hannah and having the membership embrace it so much and having events every night and long drive contests and, you know, socials with members of the clubs that brought everybody together. And just, you know, it was serious during the tournament days, but it was also fun at night, and it was fun to just hang out and, you know, enjoy each other and have some fun.
Yeah. Columbus is awesome golf city. Did you guys, you know, obviously you have the Scarlet course out there that you primarily use, but did you guys get to play like Muirfield, Scioto, Double Eagle out there also?
We did a little bit. We played Muirfield quite a bit in the fall my freshman year because we had the Jack Nicklaus Invitational out there. That was our home event that we've hosted that fall, which I believe is possibly going back to there in the next couple of years. I don't know that for sure, but that was the word on the street a little bit. So yeah, we played out there a ton that fall to get ready for that event, and then we play out there here and there every once in a while. There was never really much need for us to play at a bunch of places around Columbus because Scarlet's such a good test and such a good place to work on your game. But we also played Scioto a little bit. Like if high school state championship was going on that, or if our course wasn't available during the web event, we would play out there a little bit, which is, that course is unbelievable. It's just an awesome club too. We played a couple times out at the golf club in New Albany, which is a pretty unique spot. One of the very few Pete Dye courses that I enjoy playing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I never played Double Eagle. I've always heard great things about that place, but never had. I know our team played there once or twice, but I was either out of town or back home for the weekend or something, but I've heard that's a pretty awesome track as well.
Yeah, I hear pristine conditions. So, you know, if you're going 1 through 4, Muirfield, the golf club, Scioto, and Scarlet course, what how do you rank them?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
Where are you playing the most times out of 10? I'm not a big ranker, but where are you going to play the most times out of 10? You know, how would you split them up?
If I was going to play the most times out of 10, I would play Scioto first. Then I would play Muirfield next. Then I would play the golf club. And then Scarlet. And I say them in those order because Scioto is the golf that I grew up loving in Chicago. It's your classic, just kind of punch you in the face, tough, just classic golf course, long, great green complexes, good bunkering. It's just an awesome test, and it's just on a really nice piece of rolling property there in Upper Arlington. It's just a really fun 18 holes of golf when you play out there. Then I would say Muirfield next because it's the course you see in the Memorial. There's some awesome golf holes out there. It's really pretty. It's in perfect shape all the time. And it's fun to play out there. And I say the golf club third because it's a lot of fun to play out there when it's kind of a unique experience. I don't know if it's a place that I'd want to play every single day because it would kind of lose its mystique to me if I played out there every day, because it's a place that you play maybe once or twice a year and you really enjoy. And then I would just say Scarlet Lash just because I played there basically 5 days a week for 4 years. So it's really hard. I still think it's really hard, but I would much rather play the other golf courses in Columbus than Scarlet anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was out at Scarlet for that web event this year, and that's a great golf course to get to play every day just because it tests the crap out of your game. It's interesting, like, you look at that tournament and year in, year out, it's one of the few places the web.com plays that's actually like a PGA Tour level venue, and you get a little bit different of a leaderboard where you got, you know, par is actually valued as opposed to most of the spots that are just birdie fests.
Yeah, absolutely. And when that place gets firm, some of those fairways are just impossible to hit, and the greens are severely undulated. It can just be a place that can just give you headaches playing out there. But it's fun to see that web event go out there and have it be a, you know, almost U.S. Open-ish, like scoring, you know, 5-under is a pretty good week for a guy, and you know, you're a good chance that you're probably going to win or finish pretty high in the field if you shoot 5-6-under.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of, you touched on Chicago a little bit while we're on the golf course subject. What are your favorite spots to play in Chicago, and maybe give somebody your under-the-radar gem that not a lot of people know about? Obviously, everybody knows about the big names, but...
Well, my biggest under-the-radar gem has to be Knollwood. That's a course that if people were looking at overall body of work in Chicago, probably leave off the list every time. And definitely someone from outside of Chicago would probably have never heard of Knollwood. I know a lot of guys for the Western Am last year probably had never heard of Knollwood and walked away at the end of the week being like, wow, that's an awesome track. It's just, I don't know how many times you've played out there, but it's just a cool spot. I think it's got some unique holes. It's the start, how it kind of loops around the clubhouse, the first five holes is really cool, and I've just always enjoyed every round of golf I've played out there. But some of my other favorites, like Skokie pops off the list pretty high. Played out there my freshman year for Northwestern's event. Had never known it was a good course before then, and probably a little naive at that age, but still, it's one of my favorites. Butler's up there as well. Then another cool place to play, I think Black Sheep is one of the most fun experiences you can have playing golf anywhere, especially in Chicago. You could play out there from dawn to dusk every day and never get bored. All the different options out there. So those are some of my favorite courses in the area.
Yeah, I grew up working at Knollwood, so I worked bag room, taught junior golf, and caddied. So I've walked that golf course like probably and played it 2,500 times or some absurd amount. It's so good. It's the best is the membership knows how good it is, and they don't care what anybody else thinks. You know, they could care less about rankings. Black Sheep's a spot that's I got to get out to this year. I've heard nothing but really good things. That Dave Essler guy, who did it, he's done some cool work with renovations around Chicago area. Under the radar, good.
I played Black Sheep with him last summer. He played golf at Ohio State, actually, around the time my mom played out at Tulsa. So he was on the IGGA board with my mom, so she kind of set that up with him, and I went out there and played with him and his son, and it was a cool experience. It was the first time I'd ever played a course with the guy who designed it. So I was picking his brain and asking some questions here and there. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a cool experience. I did the same thing down in Orlando last week with Thad Layton, who's now in charge of Arnold Palmer Design. It's just it's interesting to hear them talk about, you know, the like little challenges and, you know, what they were trying to do. It's cool, definitely an experience that everybody should try and get one time.
Yeah, that's where all the random stories of, I actually wanted to build this hole this way, but we couldn't because of this, so this is where this great hole was my plan B for this hole, and it actually ends up being, you know, the best hole on the course or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that's one of the cool things about architecture is you could give 30 architects the same piece of land and you'd get 30 completely different golf courses. It's, you know, it's really an art, underappreciated aspect of golf.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Dave's working on a pretty big project out in Oregon, I believe, called Pacific Gales. That's supposed to be done in the next few years that he's been working at for a while. I think he got the land like 10 or so years ago, and he's been involved with every single part of the project. So that's something to look out for. That should be a pretty cool design out there.
It's that Pacific Northwest has got to have some of the best golf of any area. It's like so under the radar because I feel like the Pacific Northwest is just there, you know, and nobody really pays attention to it. And it's like you got Bandon, you've got Wine Valley, you've got Gamble Sands, you've got Chambers up in Washington, but then you've also got, like, you know, Dan Hixon's just finishing up a reversible course that's supposed to be really cool called Sylvie's Ranch. I need to spend like 2 weeks there, I think, this summer and just knock it out.
Witch Hollow at Pumpkin Ridge is also an unbelievable golf course. We played the Nike event out there the fall of my senior year, and I couldn't believe how just cool and unique that golf course was. I mean, just in dense forest and nature, it's just this kind of beautifully carved out 18-hole golf course, and there's some really cool par threes, just a lot of unique holes. You never play the same hole twice. It was really a kind of unexpected gem for me that I always knew Pumpkin Ridge was nice, and obviously the USAM there with Tiger is legendary, but I wasn't expecting the course to be that awesome. It was really cool.
Yeah, I've heard of that too. They have that web event out there, and Vince India was saying he loved that place. It's on the bucket. I gotta get out there. You know, obviously your kind of calling card win was the NCAA regional up at Kohler, where you beat, you know, great field. I mean, you look down the names of that. You know, you had Toasty from Florida. You had Tom Dietrich, who's RA1 on the Challenge Tour, top three in his first start on the European Tour as a full member. You know, Charlie Danielson, I mean, a four-time All-American. Tell us a little bit about that win. And I remember I was playing a tournament that same week, and conditions were just brutal.
Yeah, it was cold up there in Kohler, which definitely helped the Midwest teams that were there a little bit. I know UCLA came out there, and Florida came out there, and Florida State was out there too. They're coming from, I mean, May in Florida is like the middle of summer. So, no, but the conditions were tough, but we played in snow a couple weeks before at our home event in Columbus, so the cold wasn't really bothering us too much last spring. And yeah, winning that event, I was just playing really well. I just had my mind pretty clear. It was either that was going to be my last event, or I was going to play good enough to play one more time for Ohio State, and just didn't let the situation get too big or anything, and just plugged away and played some really good golf, started putting really well, and you know, the final round. I started it on the back nine, and we were the last team to go off, or the last groups to go off, because I was there as an individual with another teammate, Will Grimmer. But yeah, it was. I had no idea what the other guy, what the, you know, Florida Toasty had shot on his front nine. I turned at three under, and I thought I was still going to need to make a bunch of birdies to even have a chance. And made a couple more, and then I made a couple bogeys, and asked my coach after coming off my 17th hole what I needed to do. And I just was asking him what I needed to do to make a 10 step ways, because I knew the low guy from a non-advancing team made it. And he's like, you're leading by one, and you're in NCAAs by four right now. And I was like, I had no idea. I was like, what? I thought I was still going to be a few behind and even win. So then I just kind of made a couple good swings on the last hole, made a good two putt, and it just kind of happened. I never really had thought about it that much the whole week, just plugged away and tried to keep playing good golf, and was fortunate enough to play good enough golf to win.
So you've you know, you won two state AMs, you won this, you won what is a Lone Star Invitational too. Do you like to know kind of where everybody's at, and you know, are you a leaderboard watcher, like, or are you somebody that just kind of likes to go about their business? Obviously, you know, winning is a tough thing to do, and always curious.
Yeah, I'm definitely a leaderboard watcher. There's no way around that for me. I didn't know what the Florida guy was at the turn, but when I made the turn, I definitely looked, and I tried as hard as I could to figure out what he was at, but there was no real leaderboards out there. At the state AM, I stare at him, just seeing what holes kids are through, you know, if they've got birdie holes coming up or whatever, when it's, and I point out that I really only do this in the final round, when it's the back nine. And I always talk about with my coach, John Perna, that, you know, you have a strategy to get yourself in position to be able to contend and win. But when it's the back nine, the final round, whether it be the fourth or third round, everything else gets kind of thrown out the window, and it's a different game. You gotta, you know, you're gonna have to make some different decisions. You're gonna have to kind of see what other guys are doing, how low you're gonna have to go, how many birdies you're gonna have to make. And I know some people have a very different opinion on that, but that's kind of the system I've always went with, and I seem to, you know, kind of rise to the occasion when it's crunch time like that. So it's a system I'm going to stick with moving forward, and it's just kind of the way I've always gone about doing it. So yeah, I definitely watch the leaderboards and like to know exactly what it is that I need to do, and if it puts a little bit more pressure on myself, so be it. It's just what needs to get done to try to win the event.
Yeah, I imagine it, to get yourself into that position where you have a shot, you have to be playing pretty well and have kind of full control of the game. So it's, you know, a place where you can kind of put the pedal to the metal a little bit more, and, you know, you're probably hitting really good golf shots already, right?
Exactly. And, you know, you get to that point where you can even be in position to win an event, you have to be playing exceptional golf. So put a little bit more pressure on yourself and understand you need to make a couple birdies isn't really that big of a deal in the grand scheme of the golf you've been playing that week to get into that position. So you just got to kind of accept it and own up to it and just make it happen.
So outside yourself, you know, who are some guys and some names that, you know, golf fans should be keeping an eye out that are either playing Webb or Latin America, Canadian Tour, you know, that could really be great players at the next level? Or are still in college, for that matter?
Yeah. Obviously, coming out of Illinois, Nick Hardy is just really good. He just killed everybody at the state AM this year. Thought I played some pretty good golf to shoot what I did, and got second place at him by 10, so that was incredible. He's had great success at Illinois and other amateur events and U.S. Open, stuff like that. So
I made a joke.
That's
not
a secret. But
I thought I could keep within. If I had made the cut at the state am, I'm pretty confident that I would have kept it within 40 shots of Hardy. Just
yeah, he was on a different level that week. That was just fun to be a part of that, because I think me and the guy who finished in third place, we broke the previous scoring record to par for state ams, but we still lost by 10 and 11.
It was that course setup was I mean, it was just for you guys that hit it and just bomb it, and it was just a wedge and putting contest for you guys.
Yeah. And he's a really good wedge player and an exceptional putter, so that was really no surprise when you think about it. But other guys, Jonathan Garrick, he went to UCLA, played the Canadian Tour this summer. He's a guy I've known for a long time. Our families were old friends, and we grew up in California, but he's just a really good player. Hits it awesome, has an awesome short game, and he's definitely a guy to look out for. He's played in a couple web events. I think he played in Mexico and Mayakoba, and he's just a guy that I just think he's really good, and you know, whenever it is that he's going to break through and make it to the top level, he's going to do it. And then, I mean, guy I played with at college, Will Grimmer. He's, you know, the 59 kid. I know he'll get a chuckle out of that, but he played the U.S. Open when he was 16 at Pinehurst and had a pretty exceptional freshman season, making regionals as an individual last year, and just had some really good finishes and got second at the Jones Cup last year too, which is pretty awesome achievement. So he's always a kid that you got to keep your eye on. He knows his game maybe better than anybody else I've ever been around. Just hits it awesome, throws in darts with his hybrid club, and he's going to be really good for a really long time. Absolutely loves the game of golf and loves golf course architecture and everything else too. So he was a fun kid to have on the team, and definitely a kid I learned a lot from. Even though he was a freshman, I was a senior last year. It was nice to have a kid on the team like that, and I could pick his brain a little bit, and I think it made both of us better.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. He, you know, guys that get it done in different ways. People always talk about like their dream foursome. I think having guys with different games, like to watch, you know, it's like you don't want all bombers in there. Like, that's a good question. Who would you, if you were going to pay to watch four guys play golf on the PGA Tour, which four would be in that foursome?
I would probably have to pay to watch. I want Steve Stricker in there, because from what I've heard from everybody, his wedge game is just absurd. I've seen him hit one wedge shot in my life, and that was when I was randomly at Medina on one Monday, and he was playing an outing out there. He hit one into the ninth hole, of course one, and I was like kind of standing right there, and it came in flat. It skipped once, and it was like 3 feet behind the hole, and it was just like, it's a really hard wedge shot at Medina. I've hit that wedge shot 100 times growing up, and just that he was, you know, just out there entertaining guys in a corporate outing and just threw that little wedge shot in there. And I played with Daniel Chopra on a Monday qualifier a couple years ago for the John Deere, and he said his wedge game's just ridiculous. Like, he just hits these little balls in there that don't really spin. They just take one hop and stop at whatever yardage he wants them to. So I think that'd be cool to watch. And I think Dustin Johnson, just because he's kind of a freak, even though playing with my little brother is like playing with Dustin Johnson, but he'd be a fun guy in there. And then I think you'd want to have someone who could just putt the absolute eyes out of the ball. Maybe even like Lauren Roberts. He just has the silkiest putting stroke. I watched him at the Champions Tour event last year down here in Naples, and it was just, even watching him tap in like 3 footers is just smoothest putting strokes you've ever seen.
Lauren Roberts.
It'd be fun to watch a guy like that just pour it in from all angles all day.
You got one more spot. Is it Big Cat?
No, it might be. Oh man, now I'm in a pickle. I would just go with the foursome. Might have to be Phil, just so you get the betting angle in there. just so you get to watch the money game unwind, and having Lauren Roberts in there too, just dropping some bombs for some big cash would be a pretty fun spectacle to watch.
Yeah, I feel like Lauren Roberts would negotiate getting some pops, and then he would just, you know, drain everything all day. He'd probably be Phil's teammate,
yeah.
You know, the old guys. I mean, I guess Stricker's old, too. I like that you got a very interesting group of personalities in there.
Yeah, no, I think that would, if we wanted to, like, have a professional golf money game on ESPN under the lights, I think your first foursome of DJ, Lauren Roberts, Stricker, and Phil is definitely a head-turner. I think that'd get the viewers in for sure.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that bugs me is, like, you know, they talk about these, like, you know, made-for-TV things, and they always go for, like, you know, the big four names. Like, but if you got some different guys with some personality contrast to their games, like, I don't understand why they're, you know, they always want to do these made-for-TV things with just four guys. Why don't you do, like, four foursomes so there's, like, a lot of golf being played?
Yeah. Yeah, they want to do, like, an under-the-light skins game thing. It's got to be, like, three or four groups, you know? And that way you could at least have, you could have the whole field on two holes, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be more than just four guys. Because then if you got two of the guys that are squeezing that, you know, made-for-TV event in between a couple other events and aren't that into it or aren't playing that great, then it's just, like, it's not even that fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree. You know, if they, you know, ever put me in charge of something like that, that's what I'm changing. So, you know, down in Florida, what's it like? Have you gotten to know a lot of the mini tour guys down there? And, like, you get regular games down there yet?
I played in a few. I moved down just before New Year's, so I was down a couple weeks before I left for Columbia, and I've only been back 2.5 days now. But yeah, I've met a few guys. I've gotten in a couple games at some local courses down here. I went and played in a minor league golf tour event over by Jupiter before I left for Columbia, just to get some competitive reps in. Busting out some major Tiger lingo now, but it's all about the reps. But yeah, just, I've met some guys at the club I joined too, and I'm going to try to play in a few games like that and some mini tour events. But kind of, that's the nice thing about having full status down there now. I can set up my schedule, so when I'm back home, it's more just getting prepared to try to play as good as I can when I head down to Latin America. So, you know, if I play well enough down there, it'll open some more doors down the road, and I'll be able to play in some other events and possibly some web.com tour stuff. So kind of shifted my focus a little bit from playing in a bunch of the games and mini tour stuff to just kind of using my time down here to get prepared to go play as good as I can on the Latin American tour.
That's smart. So you finished top 11 last week in Bogota, so you got full status. You know, what country are you most, I mean, you're going to be all over Central and South America. Like, what are some of the sites you're most excited to go see?
Tournament I'm really looking forward to. I know that my friends that played on the tour last year said it was awesome, is the Dominican Republic Open at Teeth of the Dog.
Ooh.
Which is, much to my chagrin, a Pete Dye golf course, but I've heard it's beautiful. And it's on the ocean, and it's in the Dominican Republic. So put those couple things together, you really can't go wrong. So that'll be a fun one. And then some of the more interesting countries, like there's an event in Nicaragua. my cousin out in San Diego is a huge surfer, and he's already expressed that he wants to come caddy for me in that event because it's 20 minutes away from one of his favorite surf breaks in the world. So I might have a surfer slash caddy down there for that event that week. And I think there's just some really cool, I've heard Buenos Aires is just an incredible city. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. And that's the second event of the season. And yeah, and Antigua is another place that I've heard is pretty awesome. And probably the last one that's going to be cool to check out is Ecuador. Playing golf right on the equator is going to be kind of crazy. That's at 10 or so thousand feet, which is even higher than Bogota was, so the ball goes even farther there. And it's right in the capital city of Quito, which is right on the equator, so that'll be just a unique experience that you can honestly really only find on the Latin American tour, which is going to be, I have never really traveled out of the country, just because I've always played in golf tournaments kind of during breaks, and I've always geared all my travel so much towards golf, so it'll be cool to almost study abroad and be able to play golf at the same time. Like, I kind of tell people who don't know too much about golf that I'm almost going down to Latin America is like going to grad school for my golf degree. Just studying abroad and getting more experience and playing some events. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Should be a cool time traveling around down there.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, I spent like 10 days down in Argentina last year, right before I started this thing. And it's cool, man. I got to play the Jockey Club down there, which is like a McKenzie course. Really cool. I mean, it's what a great experience to get to, you know, travel around down there, learn how to be a pro in some pretty cool spots. How do you go about figuring out distances that you're hitting the ball when you change altitudes? I've always wondered that.
Yeah, that was a hot topic when we were down there in Bogota. Everyone was trying to figure that out. Bogota was at about 8,700 feet or so was the course was at. So it was about 12 to 13%. So we just kind of converted basic yardages of, you know, what 200 yards was at that elevation and so down. So we just kind of did some old school math like that, me and my dad on the bag, and it was a good thing my dad was on the bag because math is not my forte. Kind of, as a golfer, unfortunately, I've always had a bit of a problem with numbers. Never really succeeded that much in math classes, so having him on the bag was a help. And I also use this app called Flag High Pro, which you can plug in at your home course, how far your club goes, you put in all the conditions, like what elevation your home course is at, how far your ball usually goes with each club, you put in the temperature and the humidity, and then you can, when we were down there, I plugged in how warm it was, what the humidity was, and what the elevation was, and it was converting my club yardages for me, so I just kind of wrote those down too to have them as reference, but it was going crazy far down there. You know, me and the group I was playing the practice round with, the second practice round day on 18, 480-yard par 4, and we all hit like 400 gap wedge and pitching wedge into it. Just some 194, there was a par 3 the last round, and I hit pitching wedge that landed in the middle of the green and rolled out a little past the flag. Just because when you got a tee box with a little elevation there and you're already at crazy elevation, it just makes the ball fly that much further, and the higher you get it, the further it goes. And I'm a pretty high ball flight player, so I hit some iron shots that went pretty far and some tee shots that went pretty far down there too, which is, it's fun to play if you can control it. It can get a little annoying and aggravating if you're losing control of your ball up there and it keeps flying longer than you think it's going to or not as far as you think. So, but it's definitely a little different. But the apps that they have out nowadays, like that Flag High Pro stuff, definitely makes it easier for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet. Are you a big, like, TrackMan guy?
Yeah, I use it. I like to use it when I'm in more of my practicing modes. I won't use it a ton this time of the year around tournaments, just because all the information, I kind of want to know what everything is and what it's all saying, so I kind of can overwhelm myself a little bit this time of the year and get a little too technical if I look at it too much. But yeah, it's an awesome tool to use when you're working on your game and stuff.
I bet it's just awesome for like wedges. Like, you know, this is going exactly this number.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You see every week on tour, those guys all have them lined up behind them. And I know from when I've been at some web.com events walking with some guys, the TrackMan guys just kind of roam around the range and ask if you need to check anything out. And you can have them set up shop and get all your distances for that week if you want.
You know, with your game, you know, what would you say your strength is, and what are you working on the most to kind of get your game to the next level where you can be playing on the web and then eventually the tour?
I think my strength has just always been scrambling and somehow shooting scores around even par, even on my worst ball striking days. And back in the day, I had some heroically bad ball striking days. The last couple of years, I've been grinding with my instructor on getting more consistent with ball striking and driving the ball and just overall my control of the golf ball. And we've made some pretty big strides, which has shown in the level of golf that I've been improving to over the last couple of years. So we know we're on the right track there and we can keep improving. But my strength has always been just my short game and chipping and pitching the ball and putting, especially, you know, just kind of par-saving putts and just kind of grinding my way to shoot, you know, whatever it is I need to shoot that day. I've always taken pride in knowing that I can miss 13 greens in a round but still shoot even par. I think a couple years ago at Texas A&M, I hit two or three greens in a round, still shot 71, just had like 21 putts or 20 putts or something like that. So just, I've always had the short game and I've always been able to grind it out. So I know that as long as my ball striking gets better, that part of my game is never going to leave. So when those two things come together, it's a pretty good combination, and I could shoot some low scores.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's an art to be able to get the ball in the hole. And something that not everybody can do. It's, you know, I think my game's the opposite. I hit the ball really good and people are always like, how'd you shoot 76? It's so freaking frustrating. So we got,
I think another thing,
go ahead,
that I just need to keep working on is wedges. You just see these pros and these web.com guys when they get on courses that have good greens and the conditions are nice. I haven't really seen that on the web.com yet this year, but it's coming. I'll guarantee you that they'll shoot some just ridiculously low numbers for the week, and that's just because they're so good with their wedges and short irons. They just have so much control over them, and they can really have the ball do whatever they want it to do. So just getting to that level and getting to the level when, you know, you're playing well and you've got some wedges in your hand, being able to shoot 6, 7, 8 under par because you're going to make 4 or 5 birdies with your wedges in any given round. So that's definitely the thing that I'm working on right now and kind of grinding on, is just trying to get the level of my wedge game up there to, you know, that pro caliber level.
Yeah, I think wedges with every single level of golf, like if you look at somebody that's a tier above you, they're probably a lot better with their wedges. I mean, like I don't think it's possible to be too good with your wedges. I guess that's kind of the truth with anything in golf, but yeah, it's an area where you can improve really, so much.
I mean, like what Dustin Johnson said last year, he just practiced wedges for the first time last offseason, and he came out last year and no one could really touch him. I mean, he was playing just at an unbelievably high level of golf, and it was just because he had just started practicing his wedges, and that's a testament to, you know, just kind of the freak he is, but also a testament to how important wedges are. And if you if you get your wedges going good, it just kind of can make you unstoppable when you start hitting everything else well.
Yeah, he's a freak. It's just crazy to me how little he works and how good he is. But I think he works harder than people give him credit for. We got a ton of Twitter questions here. There's a lot of action on your brother, who, you know, I saw for the first time at the State Am this year. He was on your bag, and like I did like a triple take because he's like he looks just like you, but is like 7'2". So, you know, who hits it further, you or your brother?
Unfortunately, my brother hits it way farther than I do. I like to think it's close sometimes, but it's really not close at all. I mean, it's to the point where if I don't hit my driver well, his 2 irons up next to my driver. That always keeps me on my toes. If he's seen off first and I see he's got the 2 iron and I see him hit it well, it always puts the pressure on me to make sure I hit my drive good, or else I'm going to be, he's going to be talking some smack about how he outdrove me again with his 2 iron. But he's insanely long. He's getting a lot better now too. His game's getting tighter. He's learning how to put it together. And he's a kid that, if he can figure out a couple things in his game, he's going to be scary good, because he's got exceptional touch for a guy that hits it as long as he does too. So I'm waiting for that breakthrough to happen, but yeah, he bombs it by me, unfortunately.
He's at Florida Atlantic?
Florida Gulf Coast.
Oh, that school that had that crazy good basketball team for like a year.
Yeah, exactly. Dunk City.
With that, you know, to much of the chagrin, you know, I saw that Will is a member of the Pushcart Mafia.
He does push when he has to play in tournaments and carry his own bag, which is it's a little unfortunate. He cites it on that he has a scoliosis or something because he's too tall and his back screwed up. So that's what he tries to place it on. He's like, my back's too long to be healthy, I think is a one-liner he said to me before. He unfortunately pushes. I'm pretty strong on Team No Pushcart Mafia, but it's just might be a little bit of ignorance and hard-headedness, but I'm sticking to it.
You know, I'm a recent convert to the Pushcart Mafia. I hate to admit it, but just, you know, in a tournament, it doesn't make any sense to me why you would, you know, like when you think about like athletic competitions, like, okay, you know, the shoulders are an integral part of your golf swing. Why would I put a like 30-pound bag on my shoulders for 4 hours? Like, how could that possibly help you?
4 hours, that's being generous. If we're playing at a tournament, you're probably carrying it for 6.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that the bag's down on the ground for most, you know, for long periods.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's definitely, it's an extremely valid point, and people that push, that doesn't bother me at all, I completely understand it. I just, for me, it's such a small thing, but having to like walk around every green, I've tried it before, and that just drives me nuts. And like having to like walk around bunkers and maneuver around, and when you're playing early in the morning and you're pushing your cart and all the dew's spraying up onto you, those are just the couple things that the couple times I tried it. I did use it for some 36 hole days in college golf, and I have to admit my back and shoulders felt much better at the end of the day. But I'm also kind of have a hard head sometimes, so I stuck with carrying it.
Yeah, I like the Sunday bag too, but the problem is, like, I hate putting it down on the ground all the time. Like, somebody's got to come up with one that's got, like, a good stand, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like a little kick thing that could kick out of the top of it, so you could have, like, a little stake that keeps your club heads and Because the problem with Sunday bag is the grips get wet, because most of the Sunday bags, water just goes right through them.
Yeah, and it's just a pain in the ass when it's always on the ground. I don't know. I used that for a couple tournaments this year. I liked it, but I didn't like it, you know. So, Posse here has a pretty loaded question. Favorite former Illini and favorite member at Medina. Now, keep in mind, I'm a former Illini, so I'm...
Man, he's put me in a really bad position with this question that he's asked here. And I know he did it maliciously, too.
Yeah.
Favorite member at Medina, I'll have to go with Posse on that one. He's always a fun guy to see around the club, and we've had some really awesome rounds of golf together. We played, I think it was two springs ago. We didn't get one in last year, which was unfortunate, but we need to get another one like this one again, where we went out on 3 one afternoon, probably teed off around 3 o'clock, and just me and him, we walked 18 holes in a little under 2.5 hours, and it was just the most enjoyable, perfect day, nice, brisk round of golf. There was no waste of time or anything like that. Fortunately, there was nobody in front of us, and he was giving me some crap because I was trying aim point at the time, so I was taking a little bit too much time on the green figuring out my aim point line, and doing sign language to myself, figuring out how much the putt was going to break. But we had some fun out there, and he's definitely one of the most fun guys to play with around there. And then favorite former Illini, I'm sorry, I think I have to go with my man Alex Burge on that one. We've played some great tournaments together, and we've had a lot of fun just seeing each other at events, and we had a great championship match at the CDGA at Knollwood. He beat me on the last hole, but it was a great 36-hole final match, and we played stroke play in that event that year together too, and he's always been a really fun guy to play tournaments with and see around at events, and I know he's in the golf industry right now working for Excel Sports, I believe, so look forward to seeing more of him in the future, and he's an awesome guy. I've seen him at Radix Cup events and stuff too, and he's just a fun guy to be around. So I'm gonna, sorry to you and Posse on that one, but I have to go with Burge for favorite former Illini.
It's all right, no hard feelings here, but I think Mr. Mock Turtleneck might be a little butthurt from that one. what are some of your favorite holes on Medina 3? And, what are your thoughts on Doak's redo of 1?
So my favorite holes on 3, I think my one favorite hole on the golf course is hole 12. I think it's just I know that there's some people don't like that hole. I think it's a little weird. I think the pitch of the fairway is awesome, and just the left to right. It's not a dog leg, but the entire hole kind of moves left to right. The ground moves left to right. And, there's that awesome lake right at the green, and the green's perched above it. Anytime we're playing evening golf out there, whenever we get to 12, it's a really cool approach shot, and you hit some good shots on that hole to walk away with a par. I think 1 also is one of my other favorite holes, just because that's by far the easiest hole on the golf course, and it's always nice when the first hole is a little driver and a wedge, and especially to anyone you're taking out there for the first time, you play hole 1 with them, and they're thinking, oh, this course isn't too bad, it's not too hard, and then the course just likes to punch you in the face a couple times from 2 through 18, so 1's just a fun hole because it's a really easy starting hole. It's a good way to get the round started. Mm-hmm. And then Doak on course 1, I think there's definitely some quirks about it. There's some interesting things that he did, but overall I think it's a really fun golf course. And the last thing, course 1 was just a pretty uninspired design before the redo, and the back nine especially was quite boring with a bunch of par fours in a row. Felt like you played the same hole almost 18 times out there. And I did have a lot of fun matches on that course growing up, but it was nice to have him come in and spice it up a little bit and give it a lot more character and just make it a lot more fun to play now. The front nine's awesome. Hole four, what he did to that hole is a great golf hole now. There's a lot of people out there that don't like what Doak did at all with one. They think it's kind of quirky or whatever, but it's not a little course three like course one had always been. Now it's its own unique golf course, and we're in a position now at the club where we're going to have three unique 18-hole golf courses, which is something not a lot of other clubs in the country can say. So I think that's going to be really cool.
Yeah, it's... I think Olympia used to be four, which is crazy to think about, but, you know, Medina...
Yeah.
You've got your... Three is just, you know, in my mind, it's really hard. I think it needs a little bit of character. I think everybody knows my feeling for the Jones family is not one of, you know, of warm, fuzzy feelings. So I'd love to see that one get, you know, a little bit of a facelift by someone that, you know, doesn't believe in just dismantling character. But I'm excited to see one and two when it's done. But so let's do a couple quick questions here, and we're running up on hour 15. So we got some rapid fires from Brett. What's your favorite golf course hot dog? I know this is an important question for him.
Man, I'm gonna put it in the hot dog family because it's not a hot dog bun, but Olympia Fields Burger or Olympic Club's Burger Dog is unbelievable.
It's
put Transmiss out there last year, and it's a hot dog shaped, I guess you could call it patty on a hot dog bun, but it's a burger with cheese in the middle of it, and it's unbelievable. I had my brother was caddying for me out there last year, and the two rounds I put out there, he might have had in a practice round, I think he had eight or nine. And I had less than that. I might have only had three or four, but they're incredible. He was, every time we passed the halfway house, he had like one in his bib and one in his hand. He was just chowing down on them. This is, I think, the best food he's ever eaten. But yeah, for me too, that's definitely my best golf course hot dog I've had anywhere.
You know, Skokie's got a really good hot dog, I think, too. They do, they split the hot dog, which I think is like so underrated. You know, they split it down the middle and then put it on the grill. I think that's like the, you know, it's a key to a good hot dog.
Yeah, absolutely. The guys out at the halfway house at Corsair will do that too. If you tell them to butterfly it for you, they'll split it and then throw it on the grill. That's how my dad has always got them done out there. So yeah, absolutely. That's a great call. It's definitely spices it up a little bit and makes it better.
I actually heard from my fiance who's in the ad world and is that hot dogs are going to be like the new burger, which I don't buy it, but that's what she says. So, you know, good news for Brett.
I'm a huge burger guy too, so I think that's why I gravitated towards the Burger Dog at Olympic Club, because it combines the best, ninth hole snack and probably my favorite American cuisine of a cheeseburger. So hit a home run for me there.
All right, Olympic Club. It's on the list just for the Burger Dog, not just, you know, because of the great golf course. So what's the purest boom tower you've ever hit in your life, and how many alarms do you set to wake up in the morning? This is from Logan, and I'm curious about the purest boom tower.
Logan, he was a teammate of mine at Ohio State. He was a fun guy to have on the team. Countless great memories from our time together at Ohio State. But purest boom tower I've ever hit, I'd like to first clarify what a boom tower is. My teammate, Sean Bush, came up with boom tower our freshman or sophomore year, because we have this huge cell tower at the end of our range at Ohio State. And depending on where we're hitting at on the tee and what the wind's at that day, if you hit a good enough drive, you can actually hit the tower on the fly, and it makes this huge noise of the ball just rattling around and all the metal there. So he did it one day freshman year and just yelled, "Boom tower!" And we just, it stuck with our whole team, and whenever a guy would hit a big tee shot in a practice round or anything like that, that would always get called out. But the purest one I've ever hit was probably at regionals last year on the last hole at Black Wolf Run on the Meadow course. The ninth hole, it was just tough wind and tough tee shot, and I just sat up there and bombed a little cut out there, and it was a tough tee shot because I knew I had a one-shot lead, and that was the shot I had to navigate around, and was able to hit one out there pretty good and left myself a short iron into the green instead of a mid or long iron. So that's definitely the one, when I saw that question was on the docket, stuck out in my mind that I had to bring up as my purest boom tower.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing better than hitting just a pure golf shot under intense pressure, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of why we practice and play, is to make the most of those opportunities.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know how you feel, but I'm nervier early in rounds than later in rounds.
Yeah, no, it definitely can depend on the circumstance a little bit. But yeah, especially what I've always found tough is the first day in a big tournament, kind of just getting those first three or four holes out of the way. Because those could be, you know, the club maybe feels a little heavier in your hands, or when you're walking around, your feet feel a little lighter. You're just not fully comfortable in the situation yet. So those can be the most nerve-wracking moments or the toughest ones to navigate around, just waiting to get comfortable in the round.
Yeah. So let's see. Best Illinois, like as a high school junior golf tournament, what's the best one that you played in, and just in the state of Illinois? And this is from Derek.
I think the most memorable one from my junior golf career in Illinois has to be the Medina Shriner tournament that was held out at Medina every spring. 36 holes when I was growing up. It was on courses 1 and 2, 1 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, and which has recently switched. I know they've been playing course 3 the last couple of years, which had made me very jealous. But yeah, just everyone would take and come out, and obviously it was me going out to my home course to play in a tournament, and it was just a blast. Eating lunch in the clubhouse in between the rounds and getting to play the two courses I grew up on. And I was always, course 2 was only 6,300 yards and not a lot of trouble on it. It's tight, but it was pretty short and pretty easy, but everyone seemed to play better on course 1. And everyone got to course 2, the greens are smaller and a little quicker, and it seemed to give people headaches. So it was always, it was just a lot of fun playing that event with all your friends. And, you know, back in high school and middle school, getting to miss a day of school for it, too. It's just always good memories.
Cool. It's, I mean, I always remember junior, whenever you got to play a great golf course, was the best, you know. It's getting off the local munis and onto the country clubs was always fun. So we'll end with a couple quick hitters here. So golf tournament you most want to play in 2017?
I don't know. Oh, well, if it's 2017, probably the U.S. Open.
Okay.
I'd love to get through qualifying for that. I made it through the sectionals last year and didn't play that well at sectionals, but I'd love to have another chance at that. And I think if I'm looking at tournaments to play in this year, yeah, definitely the U.S. Open sticks out as number one on my list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. So if you were, if you were in a PGA Tour event, who would you most want to be paired with for the first two rounds of your first PGA Tour event?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Probably guys that would just be a fun time to play with. random one, but this sticks out. Jerry Kelly. He seems like he'd be a super fun guy to have the first experience with it. You know, he'd make you feel comfortable, and he'd just be a relaxing guy to be out there with. You know, it'd be tough to play in a first tour event with a huge name or a guy that is super serious out there. Because whenever you're playing a first event, whether it was a first big amateur event for me or USAM or something, it could be, a little intimidating. So being with guys that would make it easy and as enjoyable of experience as possible would be awesome. So I'd say a guy like Jerry Kelly, and this goes against everything I just said too, but it'd also be just sweet to play with Tiger Woods in a tour event. I don't know, that would just be my dream. So yeah. I gave two exact opposite answers to the spectrum there, but that's what I'm sticking with.
Yeah, you'd have like everything that you don't want with Tiger. Big crowds. He'd probably be a nice guy. New Tiger is a nice guy on the golf course.
Yeah.
So, five courses that you most want to check out and see in the near future. So, you know, kind of like your five bucket list places you want to play.
That's a good one too. I think Shore Acres. I've never played at Shore Acres. I'll put two Chicago ones in there, Shore Acres and Old Elm. Those are two places that I've never been out to in the Chicagoland area and that I'd really like to check out. I want to head up to Sand Valley. I've always played a ton of golf in Wisconsin. My family's always gone up to Kohler and Erin Hills for some family trips, so I think to head up to Sand Valley up there too would be awesome. Another kind of Midwest one, Crystal Downs. I've heard nothing but awesome things about that place, and it's not too far from Chicago, and that's kind of another area course that I'd like to knock out. And then, other than that, just kind of the biggest one on my list is just Cypress Point. We played out at Pebble in college, and I've been out in Monterey before, and I've played a lot of courses in that area, but the one that you always drive by, and you know, we hopped out of the car and walked back to the cliffs a couple times to check out 16 and 15 at Cypress. It just looks like it's heaven on earth, so that's probably at the top of my list right there.
Yeah, I mean, that place looks so good. My grandpa, I guess, used to get, he'd get this 2-week, he knew a member out there, and he'd get a 2-week pass to play out at Cypress back in the day. Like, I think this was in the 60s or 70s. And one time he had a friend come out, and like, he was so pissed because his friend really wanted to see Pebble, so he had to leave Cypress for a day to go play Pebble.
And that's an awesome story. Yeah. I'm jealous of my mom there with Cypress, because I think she played either 3 years in college in an event there, or maybe all 4 years. So she says she's played Cypress around 13 to 15 times. So that's, and you know, Cypress to her, she's like, oh yeah, I've played out there quite a few times. It's not really a big deal to her. She's like, oh yeah, it's a beautiful golf course. It's a beautiful piece of property. And I'm like, it's Cypress Point. It's like, you know, it doesn't get really any better than that.
Yeah.
So I'm still waiting on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Just got it. It's a place you just patiently wait. All right. And, last question here. Who's your favorite architect, alive or dead, to play?
Seth Rayner. He just, there's just something about, it's just, every time I go to a Seth Rayner place, I know I'm just going to play a super classic golf course. I'm going to know exactly what a few of the holes are going to be like. I'm going to know, you know, the kind of overall strategy of how he wants you to play the golf course and where you need to attack and the holes that are going to be available for you to make some birdies on and the holes that you're going to have to navigate around. So I've had pretty good success on Seth Rayner courses in the past, and I've never really played a Seth Rayner course that I haven't loved. So I would have to say Rayner.
Yeah, I mean, really good. Everything you said, so true. I got to cross another one off last week at Mountain Lake. Just, you know, can't go wrong when you build a golf course that is centered around, you know, the greatest golf holes, you know, of all time. You know, it's just, if you build your course strategy around there, it's like really hard to mess up in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, I hope everybody listening got to hear, but give TK a follow and add him to your favorite players on the Latin American tour, which kicks off in a couple weeks. TK's really good Twitter follow too. So looking forward to following along while you start your journey, and best of luck, and we will be cheering from the sidelines, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I love everything you're doing with the golf course overviews and the template holes, all that stuff. It's awesome, and love reading all about it. So keep doing what you're doing with the fried egg. I love following along and love reading your stuff.
All right, man. Well, we'll get a game in here soon when I'm either down in Florida or up here in Chicago. So be well, man.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks again.